Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You get out of an ice hockey game on a Friday night at 12:30 in the morning. Yep. There's only so many choices. And Taco Bell was always there for me in a time of need.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's the voice of Matt Verderam of Fansided, the Stacking the Box podcast and column, and the Arrowhead Addict podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam for any variety of NFL needs. But Matt, here on Thanksgiving Eve, I would be a fool if I did not welcome you, the master of food takes, in just to see, do you have any what you think could be either strong or unpopular Thanksgiving food takes that you can bring some truth to the masses?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, before I even get into that, though, I just got off the phone with our good buddy, Chef Kaiser, who said to tell you, live and on air, that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a great pick. Deal with it.
That's fine. He ended his last Chief of the North newsletter by wondering if the Chiefs just simply have a problem with the Oakland Raiders. So, you know, he could use an editor also, so I get it.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I already tweeted him about that. It's already gotten feisty.
Good. I like to hear it. Anywho. Food takes.
Yes.
I think turkey is usually dry and not good.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody always gets so excited to carve up the turkey. The only thing that's cool about the turkey, when I was younger, my grandfather on my old man's side, he got the old electric carver out.
Yes.
That was fun.
Yes.
Like, if you're carving up dinner with a power tool, I'm involved. So that was cool. That was fun. I'm a stuffing guy unless you put raisins in it. My mother-in-law, God love her, she puts raisins in it. That stuff should be thrown right in the garbage.
Yeah, that's the worst. Okay. Raisins don't belong on the table. It's not worth
that
it.
That is why? Why would you ruin a good side? So that cranberry sauce is pure garbage. Keep it in the can. Don't even cut the can open. Just throw it right in the trash. it sucks. Show me one other food that anybody's ever like. You know what's great? A food that's packed so tightly into an aluminum can that the rings are still on it when it comes out.
It's weird.
Like, only people who like cranberry sauce in that instance are a big fan of slapping on everything, all garbage.
It's weird.
I can say this much this year, because of everything going on, we're not going anywhere. So lasagna is going to happen in a very Italian burnt-around household. And right after I get off the phone with you, I'm baking some peanut butter, white chocolate chip cookies. And we're lucky if those see Thanksgiving. So we're ready to go.
I think that sounds wonderful. I love the idea of a Thanksgiving lasagna. You know how long it's been since I've just had like a good homemade lasagna? That sounds absolutely decadent.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Beautiful thing. That little mozzarella already sliced.
Yeah.
Toss the gravy on it. It's going to be wonderful.
Absolutely. I'm all about that. Now, listen, just go ahead and try just this time. Put some raisins in there, just in between like the middle layer. Just see how it goes.
It would belong right in the trash.
You'd have to scoop it out. Just start over. At least you could eat cookies. That's sure. Very exciting. And once again, I think your food takes have just found a very welcoming home here. That everyone should respect your authority in this regard. There's a bunch of stuff going on around the league right now that's kind of interesting. And obviously, the Chiefs just had a very interesting game. They'll have another fun matchup this weekend. But the main story from today, and we talked about a little bit earlier, is the game tomorrow night being postponed. Which is a real shame, because now we have to watch four bad football teams play two bad football games with no real light at the end of the tunnel tomorrow. But
yeah.
I'm just curious what you think of the way that the NFL has been kind of, as Chris Berman would say, like, stumbling, fumbling, rumbling through the whole COVID situation. Because it feels like there's been, I don't know, a lack of consistency, perhaps if you asked the 49ers 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I totally agree. Maybe the NFL's got its reasons. I'd love to hear them. Because, I get it. It's going to be unfair this year. You're going to have inconsistencies. But that seems like a pretty blatant one that could have really been avoided. Like, that Niners game was also on Thursday night. You know, yep. I get it more if it's on a Sunday or a Monday, and you're just like, listen, we're not having week 18 for just the Niners. So we're playing this game. Sucks, but I get it. With this game, I think as much as it blows for everyone who wanted to watch it on Thanksgiving night, I think they made the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why the Ravens are so different. Then you find – the only thing is now we're finding out that the Ravens apparently have a strength and conditioning coach who just couldn't be bothered to care about COVID.
Yes, which is a remarkable detail, yeah.
Potentially spreading it wildly. By the way, like, I'm not a big guy. I like, fire people. He should be fired.
Yeah.
Like, that is such an unbelievable, brazen breaking of protocol at a time like this. Like, I'd be done with him. I can tell you right now, if I own that team, he would be gone.
Do you have any idea
–
like,
I'm not rich.
Before this year, do you have any idea how hard it would be to even think of a way that one human being could account for the cancellation of an NFL football game? Like the scene in Dark Knight Rises where the field just is like collapsing underneath Hines Ward? Like that could have happened and they still would have gotten that game at least played like the next day. They would have just rebuilt the field and then tried again on Monday Night Football. Like that dude has the dude who could not be bothered to put on a mask, he wields an unbelievable amount of power in this story.
It's unbelievable. But I think that maybe is the only difference is the NFL might say, look, we don't know that we've contained the spread of it.
Yeah.
So we're gonna move it, whereas with the Niners they felt confident that they did. I mean that would be the only logical thing, but does that make you feel better if you're a Niners fan? No, probably not. So, like you said, now we're stuck with two games tomorrow that, frankly, if CBS and Fox say, hey, we're going to put the Yule log on instead, like, I'm all for it. Like, that's fine. Just show me a picture of a log that never somehow burns to a crisp. Like,
yeah.
That's great. Put that on, slap some Christmas music in the background, and I'm good to go.
That sounds lovely, actually. Yeah. The thing within the sort of randomness of some of the COVID rulings and whatnot that I think is interesting is that the NFL, and I'm not sure this is a bad thing, but the NFL never really even attempted to put a set of if this then that sort of sequences into place. It was never, you know, because even in college football, you need a certain number of like scholarship players and position groups and whatnot.
Right.
The NFL, it was never, well, if you have no running backs, then the game gets canceled, which, you know, that could have, or postponed, which could have done it for the Ravens, depending on how far that ends up spreading or whatever. Or, because I mean, look, like the Chiefs got a competitive advantage because of COVID earlier in the year, because they lost Jordan to Amu while the Patriots lost Cam Newton. That is not fair. The Steelers have had a bye week disappear and then a half bye week disappear because of games that got postponed due to their opponents having COVID issues, not themselves. I mean,
right.
It just, I understand that they wanted to maintain flexibility on a case-to-case basis, but it did create some real chaos over situations like this where you just, I would not have expected this game to have gotten moved because the Niners one didn't.
Well, again, I hear you. I think ultimately it came down to they didn't feel the spread was contained.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
They did, but I mean, is that going to make the Steelers feel any better?
Mm-hmm.
No. Now I'll tell you what though, and I feel for them, but like I don't really want to hear from the Steelers. You know what? Like you played the MAC all season long.
Right.
Like you're fine.
Right.
You know what? You basically had a bye week about seven times out of the year when you've seen the Texans, the Jags, the NFC. Like, it's not ideal, but if any team that's had to adjust a little bit, I think they're fine.
Yeah, no, that's
okay. Like, don't worry about it. You're going to get the Bengals and Brandon Allen later in the year. Like, just take a bye week then.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay.
Right.
You know, so, listen, the Steelers to me, on a little bit of a side note, like, they are fascinating because when was the last time a team's been 10-0? And I feel like universally, maybe outside of the city of Pittsburgh, there's not one person who's like, they're the best team in football.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Carolina was 10-0 the year, obviously, like 2015, they went to the Super Bowl. But they had the MVP of the league on their team.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great, like, I feel like if Pittsburgh played Kansas City right now in Pittsburgh, the Chiefs should be like a 4-point favorite.
Yeah. No, I think you're
but
right.
There's no way the Chiefs are a dog in that game.
Yeah, and I think even beyond that, like, and maybe this is actually to the credit of some like general sort of NFL media types, because I don't even think there's as much of like, they're undefeated, of course they're the best team. Like, everyone kind of knows that, like, they're really good. They have a really strong argument for being like the second most formidable team in the NFL, if you'd like to give them that. But because everyone has eyes, though, they know that the team with Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of other good weapons and an okay defense is way scarier than whatever Ben Roethlisberger's doing, you know, 6 yards at a time.
I feel like the Chiefs are the football version of that that Twitter gif of 50 Cent, like, pulling up in the convertible.
Yeah.
And he just, like, smiles and laughs and just drives. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we can do this, and we can do this, and we can do this. And the Chiefs are like, that's awesome. We have Patrick Mahomes. Have a nice day.
Yep.
Where, look, if Sunday night wasn't an illustration of that, I don't think you're ever going to have one. Exist. The Raiders have proven, to their credit, they're a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a great team? No, I don't think they're great. They're a good team. Mm-hmm. Like, Carr's really played well. They've got weapons. Gruden's done a nice job coaching up that offense especially. And they played about as perfect a game as they could possibly play on Sunday night. They made the Chiefs go on these long drives. They moved the ball up and down the field. They didn't turn the ball over until, obviously, the game was pretty much out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
They kicked off Mahomes, which is something that they've only done all year long. And they still lost.
Yep.
Because Mahomes just decided at the end of the game, like, you know what? I'm going to win now, and you're not. And that was, I know that's a ridiculous oversimplification of a football game at the NFL level, but if you, like, I don't know anyone in my life, or just in my professional life, who's fan of the Chiefs, a writer about the Chiefs, who at any point in time, in the final 2 minutes, thought the Chiefs were going to lose that game.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, he's going to score. I just wonder who he's going to throw it to.
Yep.
That's pretty much it, and it was Kelce.
I mean, you're right, and the thing about it where it's an oversimplification. I mean, sure, that's fair enough. But it's at a point now where it's happened enough, and there have been enough of those moments, even though there haven't been a ton of, like, two-minute drives, but they're, you know, erasing huge deficits and doing it three times in the playoffs and whatnot. It's happened enough that it's not a fluke. Like, no one thinks it's fluky that Patrick Mahomes is at his best whenever they have to score or have to pick up 4th and 9 against the Ravens or whatever. Whatever example you want to pull from his time as the starter. I mean, it's just an accepted part of his game. And this is what I talked about this in the post-game show. We talked about it some last night. That is so hard to find anywhere in sports, anywhere in the NFL. I mean, you have a guy or two in the league at any given point who you can say that kind of stuff about, and Mahomes is clearly that guy.
Mahomes, I mean, I'm 32. I've watched the league now 28 seasons, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was really little. I mean, Mahomes is the most devastating player I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't mean, look, is he the GOAT right now? No. I mean, Brady's won 6 titles, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's got years to go before, historically, he's Brady, or maybe even a Peyton Manning, or Joe Montana, whoever you want to put up there.
Sure.
I've never watched anyone who is just more completely devastating than Mahomes.
Yeah.
I actually think, like, if you want to compare what he does on a field to another NFL player, I know this is kind of an odd comparison. Lawrence Taylor.
Hmm.
Like, go back and watch Lawrence Taylor, who teams literally needed to invent offenses to stop.
Yeah.
Like, Joe Gibbs went to a one-back offense so they could have a tight end, because the only way to block Lawrence Taylor was literally to have a tight end in line and just him and the left tackle the whole game. All they had to do was just try to block him. It was the only way, because they could not block him with a running back, as back in the 80s you typically tried to do.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to come a time, really, if this doesn't stop in the next year or two, where some team is going to, like, create an entirely new defensive package to try to stop him. Where it's just, what do we do? Do we put 10 corners on this? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
Because I think you're going to get to a point where teams at the end of the game start treating like late-game situations differently with him than they would anybody else in the league.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where a team gets down to the 5-yard line and they take a knee
mm-hmm.
to run 45 seconds off the because they just know they might as well just hand it the Chiefs the win if they give him the ball back.
Yeah.
Like, he's breaking the game in ways that I don't know that we've ever seen. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but think about it. The guy's a three-year starter at this point. He won the MVP and was a coin flip from going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Then he won the Super Bowl and was the Super Bowl MVP and was unbelievable throughout the entire postseason. And now is the runaway betting favorite to win the MVP again on the best team, on a team that, if it plays a B-plus game every game the rest of the way, is not going to lose another game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And we've never seen anything like it in the NFL.
Yeah. I gotta say, this might be controversial. I enjoy that. I'm having a good time watching that on a weekly basis and talking about it on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's I know it's like they're playing Tampa and they're playing Brady this weekend, and I've watched. It's not every Tampa Bay snap, 95% of them. Obviously, I've watched every Chiefs snap. Like I know a lot of people going to this game like, well, you know, our defense. Just if Tampa Bay blitzes Mahomes. I don't. The defense could just take a break and drink a pina colada. It doesn't matter.
You're right.
Todd Bowles is a really good coordinator, but his entire defense is predicated on bringing a ton of pressure. If they do that to Mahomes, they're going to give up 45 points.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I don't care what Brady does. It doesn't matter. Because Brady's not going to keep pace with him. He's 43 years old. He's 3 for 39 on passes over 20 yards in week 5. Like, he's not. They're not going to keep up with Kansas City if Kansas City is getting blitzed 40% of the time, since the Tampa Bay does right now. They blitz more than any team in the NFC. So, and that's the thing. Like, that goes back to, again, like, the Raiders, by the way, the only teams that blitz less than them are Indianapolis and the Chargers. And they basically sat in an umbrella on Sunday night and said, hey, you're not going to throw it overhead. And he was like, you know what? That sounds fantastic. How does 460 yards of offense sound like? 35
right.
points?
Right.
And so then you think about it, and you're like, well, what the hell? We might as well just blitz him. They might as well get Baltimore on the phone. But, like, you know what? I don't think that's a good idea. He probably didn't do that. Because every time we do it, he throws for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like, the only answer is to do what the Niners did in the Super Bowl for like 54 minutes. And that's bring 4 guys, get immediate pressure, and be able to cover. And good luck. How many teams can do that for 60 minutes? It's just, you're asking a lot.
You have to have a Bosa, great coverage, a quarterback who will take advantage of every opportunity given to him, and then you're still going to lose at the end. That's the formula, and you still lose.
Like, you've got to have, but you also, like the Niners, like Bosa in that game was unbelievable. I was there in the press box that game. That was the best defensive performance I've ever seen, alive and in person. I mean, it was unbelievable. The guy had 12 pressures.
Yeah.
Like, there are pass rushers who go off months without getting 12 pressures, or 2 months. But, you know, they also had guys inside like Buckner and Armstead who could get immediate pressure, who could keep Mahomes. Because that's the other part. Is, like, you can get all the edge pressure you want, but if you don't have pressure up the middle, he'll step up, he'll step out of it, he'll run. There's no answer. There's no answer to it. Like, you need to be able to get pressure. Tampa Bay in this game, their only way to win this game is to get pressure on him with 4 guys. Now, they've got Barrett and Pierre-Paul on the outside with 12.5 sacks between them. Sue is still a decent player. He's very good against the run. He's decent against the pass. They don't have anybody next to him you worry about. Vita Vea is out for the year. My point is, look, if those 4 guys can't generate consistent, constant pressure on him, they're done. They can blitz. They can play cover 2. They can play man. They can play none of it matters.
Yeah.
None of it. And that's where teams, I just think, run this problem with the Chiefs, where it's like, well, you have to hope the Chiefs have a bad day.
Yeah.
Take some penalties, turn the ball over, because if they don't do that, you really are almost guaranteed to lose the game.
Yeah. I think that's right. And, I mean, even you can go back to the Lions game last year where they're just punching the ball out. You've got to punch the ball out of DeMarcus Robinson's hands and whatever. And Le'Veon, you got to make Le'Veon Bell fumble. And you got to get pressure with 4 and drop everybody else and pray to God in that moment. I think that's a great read on the Bucs defense, especially with Bowles liking to blitz so much and all that. But humor me on the offensive side, just because I will certainly take your word for if both teams are playing their best offensive game, the Chiefs are winning that game. But I'm still just trying to even figure out the Bucs offense right now, from what Bruce Arians wants Tom Brady to be doing, what Tom Brady wants to be doing. All the weapons there, the fact that it occasionally looks like it doesn't matter, what do you make of simply the defensive side, even just in a vacuum, not even dealing with the Chiefs yet?
So their offense is weird in this sense. Maybe you know this. Maybe you'll listen to it. I didn't know this. I went and looked at it yesterday. They don't have any receiver or tight end on pace for 850 yards.
Huh.
Like, you would think with all those guys,
yeah.
Now Godwin would be on that pace except he missed four games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Evans has played every game. He's on pace for 820 yards. Gronkowski's played every game. He's on pace for like 600.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Brown obviously just got there, but if you extrapolated his yards per game average, he'd be on pace for like 6.5.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have another tight end who catches the ball. They don't have backs to catch the ball. So the one thing that's really, really starting to show is in New England, like everybody who has watched Brady knows this, they were big on, look, they'd hit passes down the seam to Gronk, a lot of shorter stuff to Edelman. I mean, Brady was the master of being able to manipulate his way down the field.
Mm-hmm.
In Tampa, they run that Coryell system, which is you're going to read deep to short. So if you've got a route combination where, okay, you're running a go, a deep post, and a shallow cross, Brady in New England would read the cross first, and then he'd go to the post. It's an inverse in Tampa. So he's reading go route, then post, then shallow cross. Well, the problem is he's been terrible throwing the ball deep. Next-gen stats, 3 of 36 since week 5, and all those completions came against the Raiders. Other than the Raiders game, he hasn't completed one of them since week 5. Then you get into the pressure. When he's under pressure, he's completing 30% of his passes. And the problem is if you're trying to go deep, well, he can't throw deep. And by the time he gets to that third read, that shorter read, well, there's pressure. So that's where, if I'm Spagnuolo in this game, look, I'm playing my outside corners with leverage, forcing those outside receivers to run toward the boundary, and I'm basically getting a double team with the sideline. I play a single high safety. I put a ton of guys underneath, and I just say, you know what? You're not throwing the ball underneath. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
If you're beating me, you're going down the field. And if he hits one or two of them, finally, fine. Let him. Who cares? You're going to score 35 points. Doesn't matter. Let him do it.
Yeah.
The Rams basically dared him to throw the ball deep.
Mm-hmm.
He threw two arm punts that got picked off. Should have thrown a third. He got dropped. They're just having a lot of trouble because Arians' whole thing is predicated on getting the ball deep down the field. And they can't do it.
So, specifically to the Chiefs then, I mean, because I know you've, again, you can check out the Arrowhead Addict podcast. You want to hear Matt talk specifically Chiefs, and you can check out Stack in the Box and everything on FanSided for the broader umbrella. But the trend the last couple of weeks with Juan Thornhill has been really interesting to me, where he played, you know, the majority of the snaps in week one, but then almost every snap from week two. I actually still have this tab open because I've gone to it this many times. Week two through week six, he played almost every single snap. Like, he missed like half a dozen snaps in that whole stretch. And then it was 68%, 84%, 81%. And then he played 11 snaps against the Raiders. You talk about putting one single high safety, I would think that's Thornhill. Last week it was Sorensen. It's been a lot more Sorensen. Matthew's been doing his thing and not as well last week. But, you know, his role, I think, has stayed pretty similar. Whenever you put that strategy out there, Do you feel good about the Chiefs' personnel to pull that off? And then what do you make of what the last week and changes looked like for Thornhill?
So the Thornhill thing is concerning because they need Juan Thornhill to be that single high safety. Because Dan Sorensen is a good player. He's not a single high safety.
Yep.
You cannot put Dan Sorensen one-on-one with Christian McCaffrey and Darren Waller as they have the past 2 weeks and think that's going to end up well.
Yep.
That's not going to end up well.
Mm-mm.
And that's not because Dan Sorensen is not a good player. It's because Dan Sorensen is not God.
Okay?
You can't ask him to do that. And by the way, another thing you can't do, and I'm a Spags fan to the hilt, but you can't ask Tano Passio to guard a first foul Hall of Fame tight end.
It's tough. Okay? Yeah, that's tough.
Like, I don't care if Witten's 57 years old. It's never going to turn out well.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine if like the Raiders were just like, hey, Cleveland Farrell, you're guarding Travis Kelce. The Chiefs wouldn't even throw anywhere else.
No. No one else would have to run a route. It wouldn't matter.
Like Mahomes would just start screaming, Kelce, Kelce, come on. It would be it's stealing. It's ridiculous. No, listen, I think the Thornhill thing is concerning. Now, is it maybe just the knees going through a little fatigue? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working on trying to find that out. They've been pretty quiet about it. I don't know whether or not it's something that they don't like on tape.
Mm-hmm.
He's missed a lot of tackles this year. But you know what? He kind of missed a lot of tackles last year. He's still a pretty good player. Like, you know, some guys are not the best tacklers. And, yeah, it's not a great trait to have on defense. But if he's great at ranging fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll live with it a little bit. Now, the other side of this is, and this is something that seems to be popular on Chiefs Twitter, but I agree with it. They got to play Willie Gay more.
Yeah.
They just have to. Look, I get it. He's a kid. He's going to make some mistakes. He's the most athletic linebacker they have and have had by a mile in recent. Like, he's got to be on the field. He's got to be. They need a guy who can range. Like, this week, I think, would be great to have out there. Like, look, the Bucs are a team that you want some athleticism out on the field. Now, Gronk is not nearly who he once was, but, like, Willie Gay on Gronk, look, Gronk will get him a few times because he's such a great route runner, but, like, Gay can run with him. Gay's got some. Like, I think the Chiefs need to go more to him. They've got to figure out whatever the heck's wrong with Thornhill. They got to get him out there. And then now that Legarius Sneed's back, I think you got to play Sneed pretty much all the time. I would go to a group of Sneed, Breland, and Fenton, and I would let Javarius Ward kind of work his way in. Hmm. He's not been right at times this season. Mm-hmm. And that could be because of the hand. Look, man's playing with a broken hand. Give him credit. But I think the Chiefs have to make some minor adjustments. Look, I wrote about, and I even tweeted out, when they signed DeAndre Baker, my understanding from talking to some people close to that whole thing is the idea is essentially he's going to work his way out to the active roster by the end of the year if things go the way they hope, be a factor, and then next year be a guy that they're looking at as maybe as a starter.
Yeah.
So that's still a little bit in flux. But, yeah, I think the Chiefs, look, you've got to get some more speed out there and be willing to live with a mistake or two. You've got an offense that scores a point a minute. Like, you'll live if they make a mistake once in a while.
I'm glad you mentioned Baker, just because that it kind of happened at a little bit of a weird time, and I mean he's on the practice squad right now and everything. But yeah, I had heard something similar that sort of the thought there is get him into the fold, and then before you know it, you have like the cheapest possible first round talent. He was the first corner taken in that draft, and he went around where the Chiefs would have picked, except for that pick had been traded for Frank Clark. So the Chiefs were obviously very familiar with him in that spot, and all of the like the armed robbery thing immediately something else that the aforementioned Seth Kizer said is like, as a lawyer, I've pretty much never heard of armed robbery charges disappearing and then the attorney for the other side being immediately arrested under suspicion of extortion. Seth was like, I've never really heard of that kind of thing actually happening. So it seems like that story's been like completely flipped on its head.
It's not common.
Yeah.
It's never good for a day of law when one guy gets exonerated, and then the lawyer on the opposite side gets slapped with cuffs.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, I mean, right. I'll defer to the actual lawyer and Seth, but it doesn't seem normal.
No.
Now, listen, you know what? Like I said, when I talked to one source close to this, the Chiefs really like Baker coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, he was very good at Georgia. He was obviously a good enough first-round pick. And I talked to some people around the Giants who say, look, the first 3 quarters of the year, he was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Last quarter of the year, as a rookie, he played much better. Mm-hmm. But then, look, that all happens off the field, coaching change. You know, it makes it, you know, Baker almost becomes a guy who, look, and I'm not saying he didn't earn his way out in a lot of respects, too, with some, you know, with everything that went on. But at the same point, becomes a little bit of an example, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to stand for this. Mm-hmm. Hey, he's not my draft pick. I don't think it's the worst thing. I'll tell you right now, I'll tell you for a fact, there were a good half dozen teams that ran on Baker, and the Chiefs were able to sign him. So I think, you know, the Chiefs aren't alone in their interest. But I think Kansas City, look, the Baker thing, we'll see how it shakes out. He's a 23-year-old kid with a lot of talent. We'll see what they can do there. But they've made a couple moves. I mean, Veach also went out and got Stefan Wisniewski, who came in last year and was nailed for them down the stretch. And I would expect a similar outcome this year. Biden's healthy. My understanding he is. Coming off that pec injury in Pittsburgh, they've been struggling some on the interior. I could definitely see a situation where Stefan Wisniewski comes in, plays for Wiley, something like that, and you know, all of a sudden the band's back together somewhat inside.
Yeah. And that offensive line has come together in a pretty interesting way. Obviously, Mitch Schwartz going to IR late is not great. And I don't want to, like, you work with Jeff often enough that I don't want to, like, make, so what did his brother say, Matt? What's his brother told you? I don't know if there's anything in that regard that you kind of, that's already kind of out there that you think is worth talking about or whatever, that's cool. Otherwise, I don't want to push you down that road. But the offensive line with the Wisniewski thing being a corresponding move, The interior, they've kind of found a way to beef back up. Allegretti has looked good. Tackle's a little bit questionable right now, but, you know, Rimmers has played well. Fisher's played well as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, and Rimmers has played well. I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. He's done that job. Mitch Schwartz, no, but he's done well. I can't remember a game where Rimmers really sunk. He's played well. Allegretti's done a really nice job.
Mm-hmm.
And then Martinez Rankin now is getting activated off of IR, so that helps. Rankin played well last year before he got hurt.
Yeah, that's true.
So the Chiefs have some options. As far as, listen, I am good friends with Jeff, but because of our friendship, I don't ever ask him about his brother. I stay out of it. I don't even know if he knows, to be honest. But my understanding with him is, you know, the Schwartz thing, they didn't put him on IR, obviously, right away.
Yeah.
They didn't put him on IR for a while. And I think the hope kind of was, hey, it'll settle down, but it just hasn't quite gone the way they'd hoped for. Now, you know, backs are tricky. It's really a lot about rest. You know, we'll see. Their hope is that once his IR stints up, they can come back and be an integral part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who never missed a game.
Yeah.
Before this, ever. So, you know, he's been an Iron Man. But, listen, the Chiefs, Watkins, it appears, will be back this week. I know our good friend Nate Taylor reported that. And then also he practiced in full today. So the whole team did, actually. Everybody was active, practiced fully. So he's a big piece to get back, especially here at Pringle going on the IR for a few weeks with the ankle. Look, I'm not trying to throw anybody under a bus here, but – I'm going to go ahead and safely assume that if Watkins ran that route on Sunday night, that Robinson ran, that would have been a completion and probably a touchdown.
Yep. Hi, listen, you can say whatever you want about not putting anybody under a bus, but I knew exactly what you were going to say, and I'm just – we've had a lot of bus-related content over the last few weeks, and I'm just going to say that one – there might have been a bump under your bus just then, and we get it. Everyone gets it. I'm sure he gets it also.
Yeah. DeMarcus Robinson is a great guy. And he's a talented player, but there are times with DeMarcus Robinson where that issue causes a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember, God, it must have been about a year ago, he ended up wide open. Actually, it might have been against the Raiders, that crazy game that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you watch the film, and granted, look, I'm not in their media rooms. I don't know their plays. I don't want to be one of these guys. Like, he should have done this, but there are times when you know certain route combinations are pretty much staples in every NFL offense, and you watch the Chiefs, and you see two-thirds of that route combination, and then there's DeMarcus Robinson running a go route, and you're like, I don't think that's what he was supposed to do there. and sometimes it works because the defense also doesn't think he's supposed to be there, and Mahomes is like, oh, look, yeah, he's wide open, touchdown.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, but in that instance, it didn't work out so well. So getting Watkins back, having Hardman now back off the COVID list and everything else, that should help them to kind of, not that the offense has been struggling, but to further firm it up.
I love Howie Grant on the scale with the Chiefs offense at this point. It's like, yeah, you know, they really have they do have another gear they can get to. Whenever their number two and highly paid receiver gets back, they'll actually be better, even though they're already scoring 30 whatever points a game. It's the best. Matt, thank you as always, not just for your food takes, but for the football stuff. And enjoy your family time and Thanksgiving lasagna tomorrow.
Thank you. Have a Thanksgiving, man. Take care.
Matt Verderam of FanSided. You can check out the Stack in the Box podcast, the Arrowhead Addict podcast, everything he does up on FanSided. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. Everything will run through there. One of the absolute best in the business. I feel like this show has, this is me patting myself on the, it's really more me patting the guests on the back, but I feel like this show has like a better quality of guest than it should, if that makes sense. I feel like we've out.
Absolutely.
I feel like we've. I was going to use a phrase that both doesn't make sense and is the name of a very bad radio show and website. So I'm not going to use that one.
You're a C-list celebrity just hanging out with all the stars. You're with Leo.
I'm Jay Glazer. You know those Jay Glazer?
Yes.
You know those Jay. So if you don't know, if you Google like just Jay Glazer party or whatever, there are all these pictures of Jay Glazer with just like Sly Stallone and like Guy Fieri and a bunch of guys like that. I'm the radio equivalent of Jay Glazer. Around, and frankly, I think Matt is NFL Guy Fieri.
I mean, he has the most food takes.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I think that's a good.
He is our Fieri. He is our Matt Vietti.
Matt Verta Fieri. If you like this and these types of jokes, I'll say this, and then we very much need to break. I came up with this with Jed Marshall, producer of the program, as he was leaving today. He was telling me to, was wishing wishing each other a happy Thanksgiving. He told me to have a good time hosting both the Zone and the program on Friday, which I'll be doing. We've got kind of like half shows. There's a KU game in the middle, so I'm hosting both the Zone and the program. And I'm pretty sure that he said that, and then I paused for a second and said the Zonegram. And that's what I think I might just have to introduce it every time that way, just across the two shows. You're listening to the Zonegram on Sports Radio 810.
That also might be the new season of the Adventure Zone.
The Zonegram. That's their like Insta account.
Ooh, that's
at the Zonegram. It's probably taken.
We do have a connection. You need to talk to your good friend Chris Plunge, but yeah, just
my good personal friend Chris Plunge.
Put this in there. Put this in there.
I also could be the pro zone. I think isn't that the water ice superhero from The Incredibles? Isn't he pro zone? The pro zone on Sports Radio 810? Or is that sounds like a medication? Honestly.
Prozone is the portion of the range or concentration of antibody-antigen mixtures in which one of them, although present in excess, does not produce its characteristic effect.
That's I was going to say that pretty much verbatim. This isn't either of those combined shows. This is almost entirely sports. Go
Frozone.
Ahead.
Frozone.
I know. I knew it was Frozone.
Oh,
I was making
okay.
a joke about
okay,
Frozone.
Sorry.
I didn't know about the science thing, but
I mean, you were right. You were like, it sounds like a medical.
It sounds like a medication,
like
of some
a medication,
sort.
And,
yeah.
And it's essentially, yeah. It's not a medication, but it is when medications like combine. It sounds like.
Taking Prozone may cause you to shoot ice out of your freaking hands and may keep you from finding your supersuit. For the sake of the greater good. It was such a good movie, and the sequel was all right, which is all I think you can ask for. The other thing you could ask for, I guess, would be for us to take a break for the first time in 40 minutes. Hey, Rudy, let's do two segments this hour. Otherwise, the next segment's going to be 7 seconds long. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll round out the hour, which will then bridge the gap to Ryan Tracy of Locked On Chiefs and RGR Football. We're gonna fix all the Chiefs' problems over the course of these 2 hours and keep making references to late 2000s Disney movies. It's really this show's sweet spot.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Here are just a couple that are on this page.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Wife hides under bed to prank husband, but forgets one huge detail. How to order Grubhub without paying Grubhub prices. The most at gallery, the most intelligent U.S. presidents ranked by IQ score.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I forgot we had already done that bit.
Me too.
I mean, I think we should just keep doing that bit pretty much as often as we can. Thanks again to Matt Verderam. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. I realize this every once in a while. I've definitely mentioned this before, and it sounds like probably a humble brag, but it's really not. I have more Twitter followers than Matt, and that's stupid.
It's because people can't handle the spicy food takes.
I mean, like, I guess... But, like, it's really stupid. It's really dumb. It's dumb that anyone following me would not also follow him.
Better yet, just stop following you and follow him.
I would give him, like, 100 of my followers. But that's it.
100 people. Unfollow JB Briscoe and follow Matt Verderam. And then go follow JB Briscoe with a knee. That's where you get your real information from. Because that JB Briscoe is a fraud.
Is at Rudy Salad Bar available?
No, it's... possible.
It certainly is. Here,
I like mine too much, though. I don't think I could change.
No, I'm just saying people should go follow at Rudy Salad Bar instead.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty funny
good
bit, right?
Go follow at Rudy Rudiger.
Who's that?
I feel like that'd be funnier because, like, I'm not that Rudy.
Is that the last name of the Rudy one?
Yeah, and I'm not that Rudy.
Do people know about... I don't want you to answer this. If the answer is no, I don't need you to answer it right now because I feel like this is just something that comes up sort of later in our, hopefully long-lasting radio careers. But do people know about the person that greets you with Rudy, Rudy, Rudy every time they see you? Have you sort of brought that up on air before. If not, I'd rather it stay a mystery for people.
I don't think so.
There is someone who it's... I'll tell you what. If people wanted to guess who does that, I would be willing to betray Rudy's confidence and reveal the answer if someone gets it right. I think the obvious guess would be Lebo, and it's not Lebo.
I think that's what most people would assume, yeah.
Because I think Lebo would do it and know that it's something that you hate.
It's why he sent me the sound of Steven calling me Rudy Salad Bar the first time and like really just like made that stick.
Right, that's right.
Love you, Todd. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Lebo. I heard him here today. Didn't talk to me, though. Didn't say anything.
I didn't get to see him. He was like, hey, he was checking in, making sure everything's good.
Didn't check with me.
We each had flat tires within like the last like 48 hours, essentially, or within the last week. So we each had our own like flat tire story.
Oh, spooky. I bet that was a coincidence.
Some nefarious up.
No. And definitely don't like dust for prints on your cards or anything. Or in the studio. I was just holding a pen. Don't touch that pen. Or do touch that pen and get my fingerprints off of it. Who would slash a tire of yours and Lebo's? Did I say slash?
I've had my tire slashed twice.
Only one of those was me. I mean, what happens both times?
Nefarious acts by nefarious people.
We've got the Tyrann Mathieu audio. We might close out the show with that, or go there after Ryan Tracy, because there are a series of important pseudo show related topics that I want to make sure we get to. And if we don't do it right now, I'm going to forget about it.
Yeah, I know we haven't had a show in a long time, but if everybody thought we were rusty, no, we're not. We're still in prime condition of pushing back audio clips for 3 hours.
That's true.
We are ready to go. We have no rust here.
And sometimes it's because we spend 40 straight minutes with Matt Verderam, and sometimes it's because of the Avocar. Rudy, will you please do me a favor back there and Google when the Avatar sequels have been pushed back to? I know they got pushed back again because of COVID.
Oh, they got pushed back?
Yeah, you kind of...
Real shame.
I know, it's really stunning. Yeah, it's going to come out. Avatar 2 and Cyberpunk will come out in a bundle package. Would you get me the release date for the next... I believe there are 5 Avatar sequels planned at the moment. So if you could
4 sequels but 5 movies, isn't
that's
there?
Right. Yeah. That's right. I believe that's the case, yeah. I believe they all have like a date where they each kind of come out basically every year, but that first one has been pushed back a very long time because the first one came out, and I'm going to say 2008?
2009.
Ooh, okay.
Very close.
I imagine there'll be a news story saying that it's been pushed back relatively recently. Remember there are articles about it from 2 days ago. Kate Winslet teases amazing underwater ceremonial scene in Avatar 2.
Whoa.
That whole movie is supposedly shot underwater, and I'm looking at a picture of just Kate Winslet underwater with like a big like cape of some sort behind her, and it looks dorky as hell. I'm sure it'll look good with the CGI, but at that point, what's the point for it being underwater? I was walking on the bottom of the tank. That's a big ceremonial sequence with those huge heavy wings. It was quite scary. The thing is, when you can hold your breath for 7 minutes, you become unafraid. Actually, strangely, I was able to rely on my own ability to hold my breath for that long. Okay. So weird.
I mean, you have to keep talking. Like, I don't know. Have we had a movie like is there any other movie that you can think of where the sequel was just this far spaced out? Like, where, and also, I guess I mean for a movie that was clearly meant to be a massive franchise. Because, like, there have been other ones, like Anchorman had, like, the 10 years, like,
yeah,
in between.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, there was never really, like, the necessity to have more. There was never necessarily the plan. Essentially, people really wanted, and some people got paid a lot of money to do it.
No, I really don't know. And some of the stills of them shooting underwater, by the way, is hilarious because they're legit shooting it underwater, but they're all just wearing like diving suits and stuff. So the amount of CGI that still has to happen to make it work, like just shoot it.
Do you know what the release date of Avatar 5 is?
It's got to be like 2032 or something.
It's 2028. By 2028,
there's no...
Marvel is already going to have cycled out of all these upcoming superheroes.
And there's like, also right, no chance like, it's out by then.
Like, Tom Holland is no longer, like Tom Holland's
right.
dead. Like, Marvel has completely phased out a whole other group of superheroes, has moved on to their whole... By then, Miles Morales is, like, dominating the movie screens. Can't wait for that, by the way.
And the kid playing Miles Morales like isn't born yet.
No, he is not.
He does
born,
not even.
No.
There's a 3-year-old that doesn't know he's gonna be Miles Morales. So did you find what the move back dates were then for the sequels?
Yeah. Because yeah,
there's
yeah.
a reason that it's relevant again now. It's not just that this show is obsessed with the Avatar sequels.
Yeah, and mind you, I do believe this is the I have the original dates of what was already pushed back. So it was put Avatar 2 was pushed but was scheduled to be released December 2021, which was also already a pushback date.
It's been pushed back
yes,
a lot
multiple times, but it was December of 2021. Now it's December of 2022.
Okay, can you try to find the original date, because I think it was definitely supposed to be out by now.
Probably, yeah.
Go ahead and dig into that for me if you could. But so we're looking at Christmas 2022 for Avatar 2 to come out with 4 sequels planned. And a few days ago, the Mercedes-Benz Vision AVTR...
I got it, by the way.
...is a futuristic concept car that looks more like a spaceship than an automobile. It is a car that you can Google it or whatever. It, like, drives with a joystick. It's got these wonky wheels. It looks crazy. It looks very Tron, more Tron than Avatar. But it's inspired, apparently, by Avatar. It looks absolutely dope, and also kind of dopey. But it looks very, very cool in terms of, like, here, we're going to make a space-age concept car that's not never going to actually see the road. It's very cool in its own way. But there was literally a car about, like, based on this movie that has been created 11 years after the original one came out. And they still haven't gotten any of their sequels out yet. What was the original date for Avatar 2?
The actual original date was never originally announced, but back in 2010, the plan was to have a sequel.
I'm going to say 2013.
2014 or 2015. And then in 2017 was when we finally, in April 17 was when they finally, it was, okay, Avatar 2 is coming out December 18th, 2020. Avatar 3, December 17th. 2021, Avatar 4, December 20th, 2024, Avatar 5, December 19th, 2025. So in 2017 was when we first got the most specific dates, but back in 2010 was when the first time it was announced that, like, hey, this is happening. And we're still waiting. You know what the budget of Avatar 2 is?
I mean, it's got to be... It might be $250 million.
Dude, it's $1 billion.
No!
It is a full billion.
To shoot the whole thing in a giant aquarium?
How did is this movie going to make money?
Not over
right?
that. No way.
There's no...
Because
this
is the thing. Who is asking for Avatar 2 right now? Because the reason... Here's the thing. The reason Avatar 2 was huge at the time is because it really was, like, visually stunning.
Yeah, it was
you
something
go see
we've never
it in
seen
IMAX.
Before.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all, I mean, every Marvel movie now has some crazy, huge, you know, differently made fight
people.
Scene. But yeah, these are tall Smurfs underwater. It costs $1 billion to make.
So wild.
Speaking of big movie characters, have you seen the other live action movie that got a trailer recently?
I think I know what you're talking about.
There is a live action Clifford the Big Red Dog movie.
Saw this.
On the way.
If 2020 ever needed a movie, man. I know it won't be out in 2020, but if 2020 ever needed a movie, I would give all the... I would take the budget of Avatar 2 through 5 to get this movie done in a week if I could.
Somebody tweeted, 2020 has been hard. I was told this movie would have a big red dog. It has a big red dog. I'm happy. It's just, it looks kind of uncanny. Some of the shots of them, the fake Clifford, like in progress shots, while they're actually on site shooting it, go find those, because those are hilarious. I guess I'm kind of here for it, but it just seems like one of those things that obviously was going to get a live action remake, but is going to be pretty awkward to actually see on the screen. But yeah, I mean, I guess if we couldn't use a big red dog now, when could we?